Hello, this is Deb Zuver for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Community Connections. For the next half hour, I will read to you from websites, announcements, and other online sources with opportunities to connect to your community. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Let's start with some announcements. Registration is now open for Bravo summer camps. Bravo, that's Blue Ridge Adventures, Vision Optional, is a nonprofit based in Asheville, providing outdoor adventure for youth with blindness and low vision. We have three camps available this summer: our Bravo Charlotte Day Camp, June 15 to 18, Bravo Asheville Day Camp, July 6 to 10, and Bravo Nantahala Adventure Camp, July 12 to 16. You can find out more at https://q042wvt00. Details about Celebrated Adventure Camp are posted. The Nantahala Adventure Camp takes place in Nantahala Gorge near Bryson City, North Carolina, Sunday, July 12 through Thursday, July 16. It's an overnight outdoor adventure camp for kids who are blind or have significant visual impairment and who are ready to stretch their legs and hit the trail. We plan to hike, raft, climb, swim, and zip in and around Nantahala Gorge in western North Carolina. We'll stay in the group lodge at Wildwater Nantahala and spend some time at the Nantahala Outdoor Center, too. There are 12 spaces available for the 2026 camp. Campers are rising 9 to 12th graders with blindness or low vision. Instructors include certified teachers for the visually impaired and orientation and mobility specialists, along with a few other adventurous souls, both blind and sighted. 2026 is the 10th year hosting an outdoor adventure camp. You can learn more about eligibility guidelines and registration process at the website I mentioned. You can also contact Jay Hardwig at jay@blueridgebravo.org, or you can call or text at 828-335-1136. Camp Dogwood is another great opportunity. At Camp Dogwood, we've curated an environment that goes beyond the ordinary. Our state-of-the-art facility is uniquely tailored to cater to the specific needs of the blind and visually impaired individuals. From innovative design to specialized programming, every element is crafted to provide an inclusive and supportive experience. What sets Camp Dogwood apart is not just its commitment to accessibility, but also its stunning location. Situated on the picturesque banks of Lake Norman in Sherrillsford, North Carolina, the camp offers a serene backdrop for programs. The tranquil surroundings create an atmosphere where individuals can immerse themselves in nature, fostering a sense of tranquility and empowerment. Our retreat center is not just a space. It's a haven where individuals can explore new possibilities and engage in recreational activities that promote physical and emotional well-being. The proximity to the North Carolina Lions Foundation headquarters ensures a seamless integration of programs with the broader mission of the organization. Camp Dogwood becomes a place of empowerment. Individuals develop new skills, forge meaningful connections, and embark on a journey of self-discovery. Through this unique blend of recreation and therapy, we aim to uplift the spirits, fostering a community that thrives on resilience, courage, and the boundless potential within each individual. For more information on how Camp Dogwood and the North Carolina Lions Foundation are making a difference, call 828-478-2135, extension 230. Join in creating a world where everyone, regardless of visual abilities, can experience the transformative power of community, nature, and personal growth. You can request an application to be mailed directly to you at that number I just gave, 828-478-2135, extension 230. You can email campdogwood@nclf.org. The summer session dates this year, session 1, May 24 to 28, session 2, May 31 to June 4, session 3, June 7 to June 11, session 4, June 21 to 25, and there's a waiting list session, June 28 to July 2nd, and there are two sessions in July as well. The cost is for blind or visually impaired North Carolina residents. Weekly fee is $250. Caregivers have a fee of $300. Companions are $500. If the fee poses a challenge, though, please reach out to your local Lions Club to explore sponsorship options. Your spot is confirmed upon receipt of the $50 deposit, and the final payment is due by a date they will give you. It's not listed here, to secure your reservation. For more details, feel free to contact. Transportation fee. $60 transportation fee covers round-trip transportation from the bus or train station to the camp if needed. And note that the fee doesn't include your train or bus ticket, so you'll need to arrange and pay for that. So you can send the application that you can find online to P.O. Box 39, Sherrills Ford, North Carolina, 28673. Sounds like a fun summer activity. Next, the North Carolina Lions Foundation received a $10,000 Duke Energy Foundation grant to enhance recreation area for blind campers. The NCLF, North Carolina Lions Foundation, is pleased to announce it was awarded a $10,000 grant from the Duke Energy Foundation. It's going to renovate and expand the recreation area at Camp Dogwood. The investment will create a safer, more accessible, and more engaging outdoor environment for the foundation's visually impaired persons, VIPs, and blind campers. The grant will fund the construction of several new recreation facilities, including a regulation horseshoe pit, a bocce court designed for accessibility and safety, a new picnic shelter to provide shade, gathering space, and these additions will significantly enhance the camp's ability to offer inclusive recreation opportunities tailored to the needs of individuals who are blind or visually impaired. The improvements will also allow NCLF to expand its programming, offering more structured activities, social engagement, and outdoor fun in a safe and supportive environment. This grant from Duke Energy Foundation allows us to create a dedicated recreation space where our VIPs and blind campers can enjoy new activities with confidence, said Carlton Metz, the executive director of the North Carolina Lions Foundation. We're deeply grateful for Duke Energy's commitment. The new recreation area is expected to become a central hub of activity at Camp Dogwood, offering campers a welcoming space to gather, play, and build connections. Construction is scheduled to begin very soon, and completion is anticipated ahead of the upcoming camp season. Finally, an announcement that Employment Access for All, an interactive dialogue on disability and employment, is coming up on Monday, May 18th from 2 to 4:30 at the McKimmon Center. That's on 1101 Gorman Street. The event will feature keynote speaker Blair Johnston, ADA business partner in the City of Charlotte Human Resources Department, a panel of individuals with disabilities who are successfully employed, and an interactive activity. Space is limited. Registration is required. You can register online. email ada@raleighnc.gov. The number is 984-302-0666. Again, 984-302-0666. Moving on to profiles. This piece is from National Public Radio's All Things Considered, from Elsa Chang. The Americans with Disability Act brought improvements like ramps, accessible bathrooms, and parking spots to the physical world. Now the ADA is getting an upgrade for the digital world. At the end of this month, most public institutions will have to meet new standards that spell out what digital accessibilities should look like. And that is a welcome change for people with disabilities and a big shift for places like libraries, cities, and colleges. NPR's Janakai Mehta went to Charleston, West Virginia to meet two graduate students who say that their university kept them from their education. Miranda Lacey is a pretty busy person. She's in her early 40s, a single mom of two, including a 14-year-old son. Miranda, so a typical Sunday is I try to spend time with Preston, but usually for hours I will sit in that recliner in there and do homework because I'm in my internship Tuesdays and Thursdays. An internship at a shelter for domestic abuse survivors. It's part of the master's degree at West Virginia University, or WVU. She's nearly done with it. Lacey is studying to become a social worker. Lacey says, "Open, be my eyes." Soundbite, computer chiming. Meta, we're at her apartment in Charleston. We're going to leave soon, so she does a quick check on her makeup. Automated voice number one. "Your eyeliner looks mostly straight on both eyes, but is slightly thicker / smudgier at the outer corner of your left eye." Meta, that sped up AI voice. It's an app called Be My Eyes. Lucy uses it to help her with lots of things day to day because she's blind. She says this kind of technology makes it about the best time to be a blind person. "I know how simple life can be to pay my bills, order groceries, have them delivered directly to my door. Like, there are so many ways that technology improves my life, and I know that." But she says she hasn't had that same kind of accessibility in her graduate program at WVU. Well now, thanks to a new update to the ADA's Title II, public institutions will have to make sure their digital materials are created accessibly, like for blind readers, making it possible for what's visible on a screen to turn into audio they can hear. Lucy knows what it's like to get an education with some vision. She has a condition that caused her vision loss over time. And then 3 years ago, Lacey says, "I had a cataract surgery that took the rest of my eyesight. It was supposed to help, and it took the rest of my eyesight." Just weeks after her surgery, she found out she'd gotten into WVU for her master's. "Got the acceptance letter, and I just remember jumping on my bed. I was so excited, and I was like, I have to do this. I can't let this hold me back." So, Lacey says it motivated her even more, knowing her good friend Harold Rogers was in the same grad program. So, he's very tech-savvy, but he has only one eye, and he's legally blind with that one eye. I tell him, a lot of times his one eye has gotten us through a lot, you know? Laughter. "Well, I mean, I try to be as savvy as I possibly can," says Harold. That's Harold Rogers. He's 34 and wants to use his degree to become a psychotherapist. They say they've both been facing major challenges and spending major time just trying to access their education. Rogers' articles not being accessible, interactive elements not working, no descriptions of images. Meta, while other sighted students simply download and read a PDF for class, Harold and Miranda run it through a screen reading software. Here's what that should sound like. Automated voice number two. "It's also likely that we or someone we love will have to cope with that aspect of the human experience." Meta, but if a document isn't properly formatted, This is the gobbledygook it can sound like. Automated voice. Heading, level 1, child visits, colon, misspelled, implic, misspelled, passions for role. It will just read random words. Automated voice, unlabeled text box, Jenna. Well, I usually want to throw my computer outside. That's how I feel about it. And they say this wasn't a 1, 2, or even 10 times thing. They've had dozens of documents in a single semester that didn't work with their screen reader. We are ready to fight to be in the room every day of our lives, and then we go into a graduate program where we have to fight 5 times as hard on top of it all. It's just not acceptable. They say that fight has been at the center of their graduate program rather than their actual education. Roger said he's faced disciplinary action from WVU after he asked for accommodations, actions he felt were retaliatory. Rogers, we tried to negotiate. We want that to be very clear. We are not litigious. My goal was to improve online learning in higher education. Meta, but Rogers and Lacey felt they had no choice. They filed a lawsuit claiming they got unequal access to their education compared with their cited peers. NPR reached out to WVU and asked about their accessibility policies. A spokesperson said they wouldn't comment on ongoing litigation. At around the same time that Rogers and Lacey were starting their education at WVU, people at the Biden administration were trying to fix exactly the issues they were facing. You have many entities that seem to think that because there wasn't a government standard, they didn't have to do anything. That's Jennifer Mathis. She was at the Department of Justice until last year. She worked on web accessibility there, and she says that ADA has long required web accessibility. There just weren't technical standards that said what that actually had to look like. Mathis, as a result, you had widespread inaccessibility, including in education, and it was incredibly frustrating for blind students, for deaf students. So, a couple of years ago, the DOJ announced a rule that Mathis helped develop. Public entities would need to make sure anything intended for the public had to follow those specific standards, like captions for videos or making a website navigable for people who can't use a mouse. Now, instead of students asking for something to be made accessible, it should be created that way. The deadline for most institutions to make these changes, including many colleges, is April 24th. I absolutely am feeling overwhelmed, says Michael Casey. I don't know of any institution that's going to feel 100% ready on April 24. Michael Casey is the Director of Disability and Accessibility Resources at West Virginia State University, where Harold and Miranda went to undergrad. We knew the writing was on the wall, but then it became you got a date and you have a standard. Casey, who has disabilities, is basically a one-stop shop at WVSU when it comes to disability services. Rogers and Lacey say because he went above and beyond, they thought they could take on grad school. That doesn't mean this work is easy. Casey, how do we, as a very financially constricted institution, figure out a path to meet these requirements now? Meta, that's a question lots of institutions around the country are asking. I spoke to ADA compliance officers at community colleges and bigger universities, and they all told me this deadline is on top of mind on their campuses because now there's a clear standard for being out of compliance. The federal government is going to have to be the ones that does the investigations, and unfortunately, that's what makes institutions move. It's that compliance piece. Lacey says she's glad this is a priority on some campuses, but she hopes it will one day become a universal standard. As a mother, you know, I couldn't imagine my son being treated the way I'm treated, and so I'm fighting hard so that doesn't have to happen to anyone else, because it's not fair. It's not fair. As Rogers and Lacey await the result of their lawsuit, they're proud to have top marks in their program despite the challenges, and they're excited to attend graduation in a few weeks to walk together toward what they hope will be a better future, not just for them, but for others like them. Jenna Kai, Meta, NPR News, Charleston, West Virginia. And one more profile is about Veronica Lewis. She started sharing posts about how she lives with low vision and learns with assistive technology on the Paths to Technology website, and on her own, too. She's been doing that since November of 2016. She was in her second year of college when she started posting, and now she's graduated. She has a BS in Computational and Data Sciences, a master's in assistive technology, and is now working on her PhD. She's written hundreds of posts about her experiences as a student with a progressive low vision condition, brain-based visual impairment, and is interning with Paths to Technology to develop new resources for aspiring writers. Here is an interview that was conducted by the Paths to Technology community manager, Jonathan Hooper, where she shares more about her journey and how it all started with writing a list. Let's go back to the beginning. How did you first get involved with Paths to Technology? During my last week of high school, a teacher that I had never met before challenged me to write down everything that a student with low vision should know in order to successfully graduate high school. I had 10 minutes to make the list, and I started writing down everything I could think of, like how to get materials in large print, what apps to use for different classes, and tech skills that had helped me when taking in-person and virtual classes. After noticing how much I'd written, the teacher suggested that I start a blog and share what I have learned with others. I'd always been the only student with a visual impairment in my school and had never met anyone else with low vision, so a lot of these tips I had shared were things that my family and I had learned through experience. The idea of sharing what I had learned as a student with low vision was exciting to me, and I chose the name Veronica. With four I's, V-E-R-O-N-I-I-I-I-C-A, as the name of my future website. Four I's is a slang term for someone who wears glasses and is often used in a teasing context, and I decided to reclaim the term by adding three additional I's to my name, making me Veronica with four I's. Most of my experience writing about assistive technology or visual impairment at that point involved writing Word documents that I would share with my teachers or case managers about how I was using built-in accessibility settings, and they would use these documents to help other students. I planned to study assistive technology in college, so I decided that I would start my website a year or two later once I had some more experience with using these types of tools in my classes. I first came across the Paths to Technology website when doing research for one of my classes, and I thought it was so cool to have a space where students, teachers, and other professionals could all share what they know with others. It was really helpful for me both as a student with low vision and as a future assistive technology professional to see how so many different perspectives highlighted. A few weeks before I published my first post on Veronica, I attended an assistive technology user group meeting at the DC Public Library, and someone had asked the moderator a question about accessibility features for Android. They said they didn't know much about the topic, and I said, hey, I know about this. I started sharing different features that I had been using for my Android phone, and the moderator asked me if I had considered posting these tips online. So I decided that I would finally publish something on Veronica. My first post would be on third-party apps for Android accessibility. I actually published several posts at once the first day my website was live, mostly connecting back to how I use assistive technology as a college student with low vision. And by then, I was in my second year of college. A week or so after publishing my first post, Diane Bronner, who was the manager of Paths to Technology, sent me an email asking if I would be interested in sharing my post on Paths to Technology, especially my post about going to college with low vision. I was so excited that someone from Perkins thought that I was cool. I don't know how she found me, But whenever I tell people this story, they're not surprised, since she seems to be everywhere. I think my first official post for Paths to Technology was about what to look for when buying digital textbooks. What motivated you to start sharing your experiences and knowledge as a high school student? Veronica says, I was the only student identified with low vision or visual impairment in the schools I attended, and a lot of my teachers and support team didn't have the experience teaching a visually impaired student. A lot of resources and research for teaching students with visual impairment focused on students with different conditions or levels of usable vision other than my own, so everyone emphasized that I really had to become an expert on my own experiences with low vision and figure out ways to access things because no one else would be able to guess what my vision looks like or what is accessible to me. I started writing things to share what I had discovered that worked well for me, or things that my family and I wish we had learned about sooner, because we had to do a lot of research on our own. I would get really excited when someone would take a strategy I had talked about and put it on their own in their own practice, or when a teacher would mention how much something I showed them and it helped another student. One memory that comes to mind with sharing my experiences is when I edited pictures to describe what I meant when I talked about double vision or how it was challenging to read certain types of text. Some people told me that my vision loss didn't make any sense because it didn't align with what was being discussed in research, or they didn't understand how my vision would fluctuate or change. But others found it helpful to figure out ways to better present visual materials. More importantly, I found this experience useful for learning how to better explain my usable vision. My biggest motivation for starting Veronica was to be the resource and role model I wish I had when I was younger, especially since my family and I had no idea how my vision loss would continue to progress over time. I knew there were other students and families out there who had the same questions we did, and I wanted to provide answers based on my own experiences. More on Veronica next month. Now here's a few, couple performances, audio-described schedule here. June 7, the School of Rock 3 p.m. performance at the Raleigh Little Theater. An out-of-work rock singer pretends to be a substitute teacher. And also June 6th and June 7th, The Notebook at the Tanger Center. The show follows a lifelong love story of Allie and Noah as they navigate aging. And you can go online and find information and register so that you can see those performances. We are just about out of time for today's episode of Community Connections. We hope you enjoyed listening. And please join us next time. I'm Deb Zuver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Community Connections is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. I invite you to share your opinion. If you have comments or questions, please call 919-832-5123.